Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Recently, the International Religious Liberty Association held its 8th World Congress in Hollywood, Florida. 550 attendees and guests coming from 65 countries and 6 continents spent time together celebrating a unique freedom that not everyone on this earth enjoys. On our program today, I'd like to highlight 2 individuals who were included at the conference, one from the United Nations and the other America's first ambassador at large for international religious freedom. What they share could energize and encourage anyone supporting religious liberty. First, we hear from Ahmed Shahid, United Nations Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Religion or Belief. While many maintain religion is the cause of strife in many parts of the world, Mr. Shahid offers a very different perspective. Let's listen.
Greetings to you all. The role of religion in promoting peace is frequently misunderstood or overlooked. There are those who view religion as a source of conflict and therefore argue that the less religion is invoked, the safer the world will be. Conflicts and wars in the name of religion have left a trail of blood and suffering throughout history and continue to be a cause of instability in many parts of the world. But this argument about disengaging from religion is flawed. Religion per se does not create conflict. Human motivation does. In fact, religious beliefs have been a source of human flourishing throughout history, with messages of peace and fraternal coexistence. Religious beliefs continue to be a source of inner strength for an overwhelming number of people around the world. Therefore, rather than downplaying the role that religion plays, we should look at how religious teachings and other beliefs that people self-identify with can be nurtured or mobilized for the common good. One of the greatest achievements of the past century was the proclamation of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and its emergence as customary international law. Historically, religious freedom was one of the earliest rights that was sought and secured. Today, respect for the freedom of religion or belief continues to be an indicator of the space for respect for human dignity and fundamental freedoms in society. Religious teachings and religious leaders play a vital role in challenging repression and persecution, with examples abound from around the world, including the civil rights movement in the United States. And today, with increasing flows of people across borders, widening interaction amongst different faith and belief communities, rising anxieties about identity, escalation of violence in the name of religion, and the digitization of hate, it is more important than ever to mobilize those faith leaders, thinkers, and literary resources to promote peace and harmony, to foster love, empathy, and solidarity. However, that religions will foster peace is not an ontological given. There are many challenges in mobilizing religions for peace, particularly because religious teachings can offer competing truth claims and closed normative frameworks. Moreover, what we mean by religious freedom itself is often challenged, including the view that religion and freedom can be antithetical, especially when religion is deemed a justification for coercion or a license for discrimination. However, freedom of religion or belief, as understood in international law, is a human right, a freedom entitled to all equally. When conceived in that framework, religious beliefs or practices cannot be a cover for coercion or discrimination, and can indeed be a source for the protection of human dignity and the equal moral worth of all human beings. It is, of course, conceivable that religious teachings per se can promote equality and freedom through a commitment to the golden rule of equal respect, across many religions and cultures is the principle of treating others as one would wish to be treated. There has indeed been considerable effort invested in bringing religious leaders together from within religious traditions to promote messages of tolerance and harmony, or across religions or interfaith initiatives to emphasize the common good. There is evidence that interfaith leaders can play an important role in both preventing conflict through expressions of solidarity and empathy, and in peace building in post-conflict situations. And there are also initiatives to demonstrate that the human rights framework, with its commitments to universality, liberty, and equality, can be supported by religious teachings. This quest is important not only because certain readings of religious sources can be used to undermine or oppose the human rights framework, but also because religious teachings can provide a strong emotional bond with various communities and give context, legitimacy, and resilience to the people's attachment to human rights, a vitally important exercise at a time when powerful interests are pushing back human rights. But for religious freedom to promote peace, or indeed any enterprise to foster peace, we would require not just the establishment of formal rules of freedom. We would also need to nurture a culture of tolerance, develop habits of cooperation, unlearn prejudices and build bridges of trust, and celebrate diversity as a source of strength and a fact of life. If this requires a transformation in the way communities think and act today, who better than religious leaders to foster that transformation? And if this requires a reaffirmation of what we already think and do, who enjoys the trust of the communities more than those who have been working with them always? It is for this reason that I have supported various UN and other initiatives to mobilize leaders of various faith and belief-based groups to advance the human rights framework. And as various empirical studies have shown, respect for the human right for freedom of religion or belief is a powerful driver of societal flourishing, political stability, economic progress, and peace within and among communities.
That was Ahmad Shaheen, United Nations Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Religion or Belief, addressing attendees at the August 2017 International Religious Liberty Association's 8th World Congress. Our next segment from that Congress comes from the United States' first Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom. His name is Robert Seipel, and he invites us all to put a face on this particular worldwide struggle. Here is Ambassador Seipel.
All these experiences have a face. And if I've done nothing else in my life, I've tried to put a face on the problems. In terms of this issue and all of its ramifications, I learned more from a young woman, 18-year-old Mary in Lebanon, about religious freedom and reconciliation than I've probably learned from anyone. In meeting with her, she was part of that terrible civil war in Lebanon that was at least partly a religious conflict. And there came a day when someone from another tribe, another religion, another ethnicity came in, shooting up everybody. And Mary ran with everybody, fell to the ground. And before she could get up, someone put a gun to her head and said, "Deny the cross or die." Now, this is an 18-year-old. This is coercion, the worst kind of coercion. This is the worst of religion. And in that instant, the best of her faith came through. She said, "I was born a Christian, I'll die a Christian." Well, he pulled the trigger, and instantly, Mary was a quadriplegic. When I met Mary, she's in an institution, she's strapped to a wheelchair. I mean, everything has been taken away from her, except her religious freedom. And for Mary, that was enough. And I said to her, "Mary, how do you feel about this man who tried to take your life?" I mean, it was a miracle that she was still alive. And she said, "I've forgiven him." I said, "Mary, how in the world could you forgive him?" She said, "Well, that's what God did for me. I could do no other." Miroslav Volf, my favorite theologian, once said, "What God has done, man must do." The Apostle Paul said it a little bit more eloquently, but with a few more words as well. We are now, therefore, we are now agents of reconciliation. So there's coercion, and coercion that's overcome by positive faith. And that positive faith leads and puts a new face on this whole religious freedom issue, the reconciliation that comes. Now, for the Christian, reconciliation is the heart of our gospel. But this is, I think, the purpose of this Congress. How do you deal with people with deep differences? Well, you have to respect them. You have to know them. You can't respect somebody you don't know. And that takes a lot of work, and it's not easy. It's not easy. This is a woman in a wheelchair for the rest of her life. But also when it happens, it leaves an impression. So for me, I've got a picture of Mary in my office, and I will always have a picture of Mary on my desk. She's taught me more about this. This was a game changer for Cyple. With World Vision, it was always from the ground up. You're down in the gutter in some respects, but you're working through local things. And when I got into the government, I was, of course, working more top down. You got picked up at airports. You got driven around and all those kind of things that come with that. But what we tried to do is let people know, let countries know, China, Saudi Arabia, etc., that it was in their best interest. I wasn't trying to change their worldview. I wasn't trying to give them a new set of ethics. I wanted to appeal to their pragmatism. This is in your best interest to treat people well. And I thought we made considerable progress. Now, there's a long, long way to go, and it's been a long time coming. But I think if we can, again, keep our perspective on the face of this issue, the Marys of the world, we can communicate that to anybody in any country, in any context.
Ambassador Robert Cyple, in a message given to the attendees at the 8th World Congress of the International Religious Liberty Association at their 2017 meetings in Hollywood, Florida. Powerful words from a heart of experience. Before we close the program today, I'd like to personally invite you to visit Liberty Magazine's website at libertymagazine.org. You'll find many resources to support your religious liberty efforts. You can read blogs, listen to the radio program, watch television programs, check out the many articles in the Liberty Magazine itself, and basically become part of the community who supports these freedoms for everyone. Also, you can subscribe to the magazine, and if there's a subscription you'd like to give to someone else, that's possible as well. And if you don't know who to give your subscription to, but you know you want to give a subscription, Liberty Magazine keeps a list of people that they would love to send subscriptions to, but they're waiting for funds to come in so they can do that. So you can partner with Liberty Magazine to make that happen. That's all at libertymagazine.org. Until next time, this is Charles Mills inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call Three Angels Broadcasting Network at 618-627-4651 or email us through our website at 3abn.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.